Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
All right, Grace, hello, and welcome back to On the Edge with April Mahoney. You know where you are. You're at the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. We have a doctor in the house. Anybody not feeling well? She's a brilliant doctor that was a former nurse. She is working in the area of women's sexual health. That's something that we want to talk about. I just had a great guest previous on the show that talked about having 5 miscarriages and a stillbirth. We have women that have ovarian cancer. We have women that have no sexual desire. We have some women that have never had an orgasm. Oh my God. So we're going to talk to them and a lot more. So let's welcome her to the edge, Dr. Deborah Wickman. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, April. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to be had. So tell my brains a little bit about you and how you started in this area of medicine and nursing, firstly.
Yes. Well, you know, it seems like a lifetime ago, which it kind of was, but I mean, I was a nurse. And when I finished high school back in the mid 70s, it was a different world for girls. You know, the counselors in high school basically said, are you gonna go to college? Or are you gonna, you know, get married and have babies? Either one was acceptable and great. But I said, no, I wanna go to college. And then the next question I remember so vividly, well, okay, you can be a nurse, a secretary, or a teacher. Which one is it going to be?
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I just felt like, oh, well, you know, in the culture that I was raised in, you just had those 3 pathways. So I said, well, I like medical stuff. I guess I'll pick nursing. And I did. And I loved it and got my master's in it and tried out, you know, I was always in the area of parent-child nursing, obstetrics and neonatal ICU and education. And, you know, and I still just had this burning desire. I wish I could be a doctor. And one day my uncle changed my life by offering me that chance. He said, I think you should do it and I'll loan you the money. So he did. And I went to medical school and never looked back, but he was just like, you know, the branch point in my life when it all shifts and goes a whole different direction. And I have him to thank for that.
Well, a man seeing and making an investment in a woman is huge.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, bless her heart, she said, men should not be nurses and women should not be doctors. So she's back in the old school, you know, probably.
Yeah, that was the way.
Your parents and your grandparents, they just didn't see that for us. But you saw beyond that and then some. So now you're specializing in an area of women's health. Women's health is something we could talk about forever. It's ever evolving. It's ever changing with science and research. There's a lot of advancement in all different types of cancer. But there's an emotional stigma that women have when they have something, you know, if they have their breasts removed or they have their have a hysterectomy, they feel that they're less than a woman.
Right.
You have to have that conversation with a lot of your patients.
Oh, so much. I mean, that really speaks to what led me into this whole field, because I went after residency was finished, OBGYN residency, I started in private practice and felt like I was equipped to really tackle every kind of delivery and surgery and those kind of things. But when it came to relating to women in the office, when they start to develop trust and they start asking personal things like, I haven't had an orgasm, what do I do? Or I hate sex, what do I do? And I found myself at a loss. I wasn't trained for that. And so I went to UCLA and did a postgraduate fellowship in female sexual medicine. I still wasn't prepared for that. I could, you know, handle the research and the physical part and prescriptions and hormones, but there was always more. And that's it. That's that emotional part, that, you know, belief part, what we believe about ourselves and our relationships, all that factors in. And then I was fortunate to meet my mentor, Dr. Gina Ogden, who really developed the notion of the 4D wheel of sexual experience, where you have those four dimensions, body, mind, heart, spirit. And through her, I got certified as a sexuality counselor, so I could come at it from that angle as well and really talk with women and understand about their emotional issues and how it affects them. Because sex is never just a physical thing for women. Everything.
No, it's mental. That's yeah. where the orgasm comes from. It's the, you know, it's the mind, it's the psyche, you know.
Right. Not never just a physiologic thing. And it can be blocked by those non-physical things.
It can
things.
Be blocked. And it can also, do you think it can also hinder your healing?
Yes. Yes, it definitely can.
And then think of the women that have been traumatized, that have been sexually abused or sexually assaulted. It's a lot to wrap your head around.
It's so much. And with her help, I was able to develop this actual modality to really help women with trauma, with low body image, with recovery. And what I did was adapt her 4D wheel of sexual experience to the gynecologic experience, to the pelvic exam. Mm. So just in a nutshell, kind of the work that I do really centers around first talking with the woman with her genitals, her reproductive organs being the voice of the experience, where we go through the whole journey, body, mind, heart, spirit, and what's come up along the way. But then the powerful part, even more, is when I take her into the exam room and I have a little camera attached to my colposcope, and it beams the images to a little digital pad that she's holding. And so she sees everything I'm seeing as I'm doing it. And we have a whole interaction and tour, and it always is different with each person. But when she can connect with her own anatomy, especially the inside hidden part, and understand what's going on and what is affecting her, it becomes really powerful. I mean, I've helped women move through so many barriers that way. And what's interesting is, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to tell you that where that led me was, you know, I started working, being invited and doing some things with women's workshops and women's groups. And, you know, what I've discovered with women and with myself, you know, about 10 years ago when I turned 50, you start asking, is this all there is? You know, what else is there? And you start getting really curious about, you know, just what life has to offer and satisfaction and pleasure.
I'll tell you, I'll self-disclose. At 40, my libido kicked up tenfold.
Yes.
I was a sexual beast. My husband was like, whoa, slow down, girl. But it was, and it was a new awakening. It was a new sensation. It was awakened. A thing. But then I turned about 47 and hit the menopause.
And it all changed.
And well, the sexual desire didn't, and I didn't have a lot of the symptoms that women have. You know, when they have that, I did have the major hot flashes. That was ugly. And the weight gain. But outside of that, you know, and I really didn't feel, I didn't feel less sexy, but I have girlfriends that have told me that they've had vaginal drying, that they have no sexual drive whatsoever, that they are, you know, they're angry, or they're having this emotional, you know, roller coaster that they're riding on all the time. What do you say to a woman that's at that age of menopause? Because they don't know what to expect. Each woman is different. We don't know to take the hormone replacement therapy. You know, there's a lot. I know it's very individualized, but what would you say to a woman entering into that journey?
Well, I deal with this all day, every day with, you know, I see in my clinical practice, many, many women, and you're right. It's so, the journey is so individualized, but it really needs to be guided, because women just don't know. And there's so many kind of emotionally charged or even politically charged myths we don't know how to separate myth from fact, and what's true for me might not be true for you. So I always tell them it needs to be guided. And it really starts with kind of as a tag along to what I was already talking about, this connection with the body and the mind, because, you know, it's so vital that that channel is open, especially as we pass into the midlife. So it does need to be a guided journey and individualized. And it kind of tags back to what I was saying before about that body-mind connection, because we really have to keep that channel open. And so many stresses in life tend to clog that up. But when I can take a woman and really connect her with a psychosexual type practice where she really gets intentional and learns to know her body and what makes it tick, and then we can kind of build on that as to does she need hormones? Does she need, you know, more counseling? Does she need a procedure? Whatever it is, how do we solve whatever pain there is, whatever problems are showing up? But what I discovered about women was that they can and they do have power over that part of their body. I coined this term vulvoplasticity because it's really a similar process to the very popular term neuroplasticity, where, you know, the brain controls the structure and function of different parts of the body depending on the experiences we provide it. Well, what I learned from these groups of women was that their genitals looked a lot different than just the normal women in my practice. And just to boil it down, what that difference was because when women get tuned in and intentional about that psychosexual connection between their body, their mind, their emotions, and their relationship with life and their intimate partner, they actually start to produce more arousal fluid in response to arousal. And when the body has that challenge of having more fluid to deal with, it makes more openings. And so there's these little openings right around the urethra that have been called the Skene's gland ostia, or now they're called the female prostate. But it's just a little branch of tubules that are underneath what we call the G-spot, what's known as the G-spot in the vagina. And when we become intentional and really connect with our sexual response in this way, we make more of these little openings. It becomes more pleasurable, and we just have much more control over our experience. And then what does that translate to? It just means that power of connecting the body with the mind shows up as better self-esteem, improved body image, self-confidence, and then that translates into better relationships, more satisfying sex, and enhances the quality of life. And the important thing is, you know, women tell me all the time, oh, I'm over menopause, I don't have hormones, I'm all dried up. I have seen this phenomenon happen in women in their 20s, but also women in their 70s, even ones that weren't on hormones. So the body and the mind do amazing things when we tune in and connect and really like reclaim our power through that.
Absolutely. Self-gratification. You know, people turn a side eye to masturbation. They look at masturbation more as a man type of thing than a female type of thing. But I know a lot of women that's got a battery operated boyfriend, and they, you know, they're satisfied with that and they're celibate. What do you say to those women? There's nothing wrong with that.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In any setting, I think it's vital that women explore their own bodies to understand what particular spots that are, you know, appealing to them, because we're all wired a little differently. There's four different sets of nerves that supply a woman's vulva, and those are, you know, really all nuanced. And if we don't know what we like, how can we ever tell a partner how to please us or how to help us? You know, so many women are shamed and inhibited in exploring that aspect of ourselves, that we don't understand what we want. We don't know how to ask for what we want. So we don't ever get what we want. So that needs to change. And I think self-stimulation, self-exploration is healthy. It's important. It needs to be done in order to wire those nerves between our brain and our genitals, so that, you know, because in that situation, if you don't use it, you will lose it to some extent. You can get it back, but it takes a lot more work and intentional practice. So
I like what you said about, you know, communicate with your partner. Tell them what you want, what your needs are, where it feels good, where it hurts, you know, what you'd like to try. If it doesn't work out, then you don't have to do that. You can try something else. A lot of people are turned on against pornography, but, you know, it could be a tutorial, something that you can look at with your partner or by yourself. Just get, wow, you know, I had no idea that they were doing those things, because they are doing things. And sexuality and gender preference now has taken on a life of its own. Or may I say that it's always had a life of its own. However, now things are just evolving and people are speaking more freely about their sexuality, about, you know, transgender, about being gay. This is definitely what it is. And so we need to open ourselves up to that conversation, because we're going to get left behind. There's no more shaming. What is a shame is a woman's right to choose and how that is being threatened. And everybody has a choice, but I don't want some old man sitting behind the desk at Congress telling me what I should be able to do with my body. There have been some very trying situations. I know one woman confessed to me that she had 28 abortions. 28 abortions. I had a post-abortion counselor on my show that really worked with women, because one in four women have had to have an abortion for whatever reason. Their life could be threatened, their baby is not growing properly, their health is a situation. But what do you feel as you know, as our rights are being rolled back?
I think it really does need to be a decision made between a woman and a doctor that she trusts. And she should be supported on that journey, however it is, whatever it is that she needs. And I think the majority of people in my profession are nurturing that way and care that way. That it's, you know, the woman is our patient, and we know her usually in this type of relationship as a gynecologist. We know that woman for years. I have women that I've taken care of for 20 years, you know, and they need our support, and we need to keep, you know, politics and judgment out of it that way. And so that's why
it's difficult. Yeah. And I mean, even for medical professionals, now they're being threatened, you know, they could be sued or they could be liable for performing what I think could be considered in some situations as a humanitarian act. So what are we saying to young women now about sex and STDs and, you know, teenage pregnancies? You know, you said that you're working with women more, you know, 50 and over, but what are you saying to the young women that are coming into your office?
Well, it's really important to get these points across to women when they are young, because our generation and the one above us has so many hangups and shame around sex and around communicating. So many times women my age, I'll ask them something about, well, even like, when did your mom go into menopause? And she goes, I don't know. We never spoke about that kind of thing. And so I would say to the young women, or I do say to the young women, it's communication is so important, and also self-empowerment, and to understand your body and connect with it, and understand your value, and that you don't need to please a man for him to like you. You need to like yourself first. And that starts so much around our own, you know, feelings of self-image, and translates into what we do sexually and how we seek pleasure. And even if we think we deserve pleasure, because pleasure is a vital component of quality of life. And so if we don't learn young how to achieve it in all the ways, you know, we're going to make mistakes, because we're going to look over here and, whoa, that's not the way to do it. And then you end up with, you know, sexually transmitted infections or unwanted pregnancies, or, you know, a host of issues depending on which way you're trying to explore. But it's really important to get trusted relationships, good communication, and empowerment, and having people help you believe in yourself and trust yourself.
And I always throw in good hygiene.
Well, that's always a plus.
It is a plus. I mean, for you or the person that you're with, it can be a deal breaker.
Truly.
In so many ways. So let's ask you some fun questions, okay? Some things that people probably don't ask you. If you were on a desert island, what would be three things that you would absolutely have to have?
Wow. And I'm alone?
No, we'll give you a partner. We won't take away your pleasure. I mean, you two are there deserted.
Right. Hopefully it's somebody I like.
Right.
Oh, gosh. I just didn't. It's hard to even think. What would I take? I guess I would have my cat, because he's my soul cat. And I feel like he's had, you know, 1,000 lives. And
wow, that's sweet.
He's wiser than Buddha. So let's bring him on the island. And gosh, what else? It's kind of that same question of, you know, what are you going to grab if there's a fire in your house, you know?
Oh no, I did disaster preparedness, I know. Well, we'll circle back to that. So let's ask you, what are some things that bring you joy, that bring you your greatest joy? Outside of kids, outside of your spouse, what brings you personal joy?
Yeah. I am so fortunate to have really morphed my career into a path that I have a passion for, and it lights me up. When I wake up in the morning, I'm excited to go in and make the difference that I'm going to make that day, because every patient I see, I'm connecting with her in a way that I really, really love. And that is a rare thing. It's a precious thing, because I see so many people who hate what they're doing and look forward to the golden years when it's over with. But if you don't love what you're doing right now, your life is really off track.
Right. And you got to set that up. You know, my mother died at 91, and she says 91 is the pits. I said, you think so? She goes, yeah, well, you know, everything is starting to disintegrate and go backwards. Mm-hmm. So, and we want to live our best life as we're doing it right now. So, Dr. Wickman, what would you tell yourself at 25 years of age?
Wow, if I could just go back to 25 years old, I would definitely tell that young woman to lighten up and have more fun. I was so serious, so hard driving, pushing, thinking I had to get so much done, and I didn't stop and smell the roses often enough. And I would say, I need to practice what I preach now to myself then. If I could have cultivated a practice of pleasure on all levels, you know, all the senses, all the experiences in a daily life, that would have been so much better to start then.
Right. What do you find are some of the biggest challenges that women face right now when it comes to their sexual health?
Some of the things are things that have never changed through the ages, but we're not confident in our appeal. We think somebody has to like us for us to be worthy. And that's a huge problem I try to help women overcome every day. And then the other spectrum of that is that we are in charge of our own pleasure. We need to own it. It's not up to our partner, our husband. It's not up to somebody else to give it to us. We need to figure it out and be responsible for it. And when we do, then we can experience it. So that's a big challenge. It's like, I have so many women that say, oh, I have no desire because my husband can't give me an orgasm. Well, why? It's because you don't even know what you want, what it would take. So how can he know? You know, a lot of this is just communication, but there's so many challenges.
It's the shame. You know,
the shame, yeah.
So many people have been brought up, you know, and I didn't do that to my daughter. I told her, you know, that she was a princess, that, you know, she was worthy, that she was deserving, that this is a sacred space, that find who it is, be monogamous with that person, but love yourself first. And if you love yourself first, then you can exude that out to other individuals.
That's where it starts.
Do it. You know, sexuality was never, when she went to have her first sexual encounter, she came to me. And we went to the doctor, and I said, well, do you want me to go in with you? And she goes, no. But the doctor came out with her and said, you know what? Your daughter is very well informed. She's very mature, and she will make responsible choices. Learning that no is no, and that you don't have to dumb yourself down or be submissive to someone else to make you feel better. You know, watch your alcohol and drug consumption. Young women on college campuses, rape is running rampant, you know.
Right, the whole issue of consent. Yeah, we weren't told about consent when we were young, you know. But I think it's become more of a conversation now. I mean, women, young women are, I hope, becoming more empowered to be able to say no and to be able to not put themselves in, you know, compromising situations where they're vulnerable.
Right. And own your sexuality.
And own your sexuality.
Own your sexuality. However,
yeah, there may be some, you know, fluidity to it. We're,
right.
You know, more and more research is showing we're not all 100% one way or 100% the other way. It's, you know, variations on a spectrum, and it may not matter, but it may, you know. And so you need to understand whatever's going on in yourself and communicate that and get help if you're not sure, if you're confused.
Right. Life is not vanilla brains. It's Neapolitan.
No. That's right.
You've got a choice. You got a choice of flavors. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Got a choice of flavors. So let me ask you this. How, as a woman in this space, a doctor in this space, do you want to be remembered and memorialized?
I want to be remembered by as a researcher, a clinician, an author who really like moves the needle on how to help women light up with life, whether it's, you know, starting with their sexuality, but that leads to like this big project I'm taking on and developing now over this next year. It's all about how to get into the flow state, you know, that state of being fully immersed in a feeling of energized focus and enjoyment. And what if we could apply that flow state to sexuality with our partners or with, you know, life in general? And so we know the neurotransmitters involved, many of them are the same ones that mediate desire and arousal, but I want to try to harness those and put that into a program where I'm helping women be intentional about how to induce that around their sexual partner so they can enjoy sex more. That's going to be my next big project. And I feel like the biggest one I've taken on so far.
Well, I'm definitely going to be following you. You are in the process of writing a book. What's in the pages?
Yes. The pages are really all about the whole experience of how to connect with your body and how to develop these psychosexual practices that will allow you to, you know, take charge of your sexual response. It's all about exactly how to do that. And I'm going to be putting on some workshops and seminars over the next year, also dealing with that topic to really help women connect more with that. I have a website called fantasticallyfemale.com. And so if people are interested in working with me or hearing more about as things evolve with my projects and my book and my outreach, I can you can sign up on my mailing list and I can keep you informed.
Well, we're definitely going to put all of your information at the back end of this and also in the show notes. I want to thank you, Dr. Deborah, for being here with us and being so honest and frank. It's going to be a perfect marriage to a lot of the other shows that I've had because women have a lot of trauma. They have a lot of shame. And we are moving into, 5D. We are in the age of Aquarius. It is a female energy. It's much gentler. It's much kinder. But we need to be aware of that. And we need to take our seat as queens on the throne. And thank you so much for leading that. I appreciate you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Brains, go in and check it out. See how you like to bump your ugly. Fun. It is. Or if it's not and there's something else that's been going on, maybe you can work through it with great people like Dr. Deborah. She's invested her life in this, you know, to help us find pleasure in every aspect of our life, not just sexually, but mentally and socially and with our relationships. Go in and like, love, share all of the information. Click on her Facebook page and click on mine and click on the thing that, you know, makes you feel good.
Good advice.
All right. Talk to you soon.